Outdoors, from Rangeley to Eastport, Fort Kent to Kittery, the Maine Outdoors is waiting for all of us to see. The mountains, lakes, and rivers, the wildlife, and the woods are just outside your doorway, so get outside and find it in the Maine Outdoors. Fishing and hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall. If it happens in the Maine Outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob and Matt are your Outdoors Hotline. Each Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio to the Maine Outdoors.
Welcome to the Maine Outdoors. Here's tonight's host, V. Paul Reynolds.
Thank you. Thank you. And haven't we been having a late Indian summer, but isn't it beautiful? Wow.
Take it any day.
Yeah, so nice. And it's going to continue, I guess.
Yeah. I think we've got rain coming Wednesdays.
Good. Yeah. Not so good for the deer hunting, but great for other activities.
It sure is.
Yeah. Probably good golfing weather still, I would think.
Can't relate.
Yeah. Hey, we digress. It's nice to have you on board here for Maine Outdoors, Maine's longest-running outdoor talk radio program. And as I told you last week, we're celebrating our 23rd anniversary of broadcasting and hosting this show. And if you want to show your appreciation, you simply send me a small package of frozen moose backstraps. Would be deeply appreciated. If you don't have the – I haven't been getting any yet, but if you just have some flank steak, that would be good as well. Anyway, nice to have you with us. If you want to be on the program tonight, you know the number. It's 1-800-966-1039. Number again, 1-800-966-1039. And remember, you have to dial the entire number, even if you're in the local Bangor area. And we urge you to turn down your radio if you're going to call us to help avoid that distracting echo. Our guest tonight I'll introduce in just a second, but first the crew who make the show possible. Yours truly, V. Paul behind the mic, and in the studio behind the toggle switches and the gauges is the esteemed Oracle of Grand Lake Stream, my friend Norman Plord.
Good evening, everybody, and good evening, Paul.
Nice to have you with you.
That's always fun.
Nice to have you with us, not with you. What are those little dolls that are in the window there? I've never seen those before.
They were here last week. I don't know where they're from, but they kind of...
Little, probably Rick and George's voodoo dolls.
I would probably say they're voodoo dolls.
I see some pins sticking out of them, too. Yeah, wow, scary stuff. Hey, we have... also, don't forget, our other co-host can't be with us in person tonight because of the COVID protocols, but he is with us in spirit, and he will be with us from his virtual phone booth over in Brewer. Our co-host Bob Lehman is standing by, and he'll have a fishing report in just a few minutes. If you have an idea for a guest you'd like to see us have on the show, we urge you to get in touch with me. You can dash me off an email, and my email address is vpaulr@tds.net, vpaulr@tds.net. And again, the number, if you want to be on the program here on the Voice of Maine News Talk Network, is 1-800-966-1039. And if you're new to the program, you're listening to us on the Voice of Maine News Talk Network, 101.3 Augusta, 103.9 FM Bangor, and 95.1 down there in the seacoast village of Rockland, Maine. Okay, a couple of things here for Outdoor Digest, brought to you by the Northwood Sporting Journal. Want to remind you again that if you want to check out our new website, you can do so by going to www.sportingjournal.com. A November issue is on the streets right now. You can pick them up at the newsstand, and there's some nice articles in there that are in the spirit of the November deer season. There's a great story in there on the Hinkley buck, and also a story by yours truly about the best Maine deer guns, and that's always been an interesting debate and discussion. If you'd like to read that, you can read it in the Northwood Sporting Journal. A couple of things here reminding you again, if you haven't figured it out yet, deer season is in full swing. And getting different reports. We've had some folks who have taken some nice deer. And by the way, if you've filled your tag and you want to share the story with us, we'd love to hear it right here on Maine Outdoors tonight. So give us a call. Tell us about your deer story. I've been out and about and have been since the 1st of September. Started out in a blind with my bow, put in many hours, and seeing a lot of turkeys and squirrels and porcupines, but no deer in the sights yet. Now we're hunting with guns and the firearm season is on. I'm seeing a lot of scrapes, but not a lot of rubs this year. And I, I don't know what the, I have no idea what the explanation for that is. Usually I see both. Mm-hmm. But I've been really looking for those rubs. I'm not seeing them. What do you suppose that indicates? Any idea?
Wouldn't have a clue. I know that I've only seen scrapes also. I haven't seen any rubs
yet. Seen any rubs either. Well, maybe somebody who's an expert on that can call in and enlighten us. Anyway, deer season's in full swing. Be careful. Be sure to hunt safely. And I'm not sure what the situation is with the non-residents. Some non-resident hunters can come here without a quarantine, and some can't. It depends on what state you're from. I think it's not sure. I think it's New York and Connecticut, but I'm not positive about that. Anyway, we hope you have a good deer season and a safe deer season. And remember too that if you're hankering for some nice lean meat, turkey season is still on. And man, I am seeing lots of turkeys everywhere I travel. And I'd like to see at least one deer for every 25 or 30 turkeys that I've seen. But anyway, if you like lean meat, turkeys are the way to go. And you can tag, I think you can take three now of either sex this fall. So if you want to get one before Thanksgiving, you might want to get out there and you still have time before the big Thanksgiving dinner. And that's about it, I think. We have, I think we're ready for Bob's famous music.
I'm the big boss, fast.
Yeah.
And you work for me.
Yeah.
This is my rock.
Yeah.
All righty. Hey, Bob, how you doing tonight? Are you there, Bob?
Hello.
Hi, Bob. How are you? Not hearing us, I guess.
Hello.
Yes, sir. Are you there, Bob?
Hello.
We're hearing you, Bob.
You're hearing me? Are you?
Yeah.
I'm not hearing you.
Well, how are you responding then?
Right switches.
You still can't hear us? Not sure what's going on there.
Hello.
Wow. I guess, well, while you're waiting to figure that out, Mr.
Hello?
Engineer, I'm...
I can call him back.
All right, why don't you call him back? Try that and get a better connection. And I failed to mention at the outset of the program, one of the most important things that I overlooked, I forgot to introduce our guest tonight. We have two phone guests who will be with us. First guest is Rod Fraser. Rod is an ATV snow sled rider for the Northwoods Sporting Journal. Rod's very knowledgeable about snow sleds and ATVs. And I thought it might be nice to have Rod come on and talk a little bit about some of the new sleds that are being put on the market this winter. There's some, the technology has really advanced in snow sleds, and Rod is very conversant about that, and I thought it might be nice to have Rod get on here and talk a little bit about that. Then after that, at 7:30, we'll hook up with Hans Carlson. Hans is the executive director of the Blue Hill Heritage Trust. Are you there, Bob Lehman? Hello, Bob. No, guess he's not there.
I don't think we'll be able to have him. I mean, I spoke to him on the phone, and then Wyatt, it's a board issue.
I'm right here. Right here.
Okay, Bob.
I'm just not getting into the studio. I can hear you all right, but I can't hear Paul.
Okay.
You can't hear Paul.
Okay, go ahead and give us your fishing report. Tell him to give us the fishing report. Tell him to go ahead.
Why don't you go ahead and give us a fishing report, since you can't hear Paul.
Okay, that you can hear me?
I can hear you, but Paul, but you can't hear Paul.
I'm on the air. I'm on the air, right?
You are on the air.
Okay, well, and what I was going to say right off was I know Paul and Di there, Reynolds, the host of the show, was had us tracking deer on that beautiful snowfall we had one morning. I wanted to talk to Paul about it, but we can't seem to get together here. But anyway, I'll get into my report. Last week, I was talking about George Snedden in Bangor, who made Lucky Scott fly rods, and I just wanted to mention they were beautiful bamboo rods, and the name of his was Lucky Scott, and those were his two boys. And I also wanted to mention that Galen Hashey in Vesey made some beautiful graphite fly rods for a number of years, and he was known for his beautiful reel seats that he had made out of imported woods and things. Now, to get to the main part of the show that I wanted to mention here was, this is the time of year, you know. I know when I did a lot of trapping in the my younger days, I did walked a lot of streams and so forth, and brooks and streams, canoe and get out and wade and walk and so forth. And I would see a lot of trout spawning. And if you're a hunter now, you come to a stream, you want to check it out because you'll find some beautiful trout in the shallows, in the ripples, spawning. And I'm telling you, they are some pretty right now. So you want to look for that.
You want to try talking to them?
Can you hear me, Bob?
Yes, I can. Oh, I can hear you.
Okay, we can hear each other. You can't fish for those trout, though, right? It's too late, right?
No, you can't. You can't. But, you know, if you're out in hunting, you know, you can you come to a stream, you want to check it out. Really should.
Okay, so it's okay to shoot. Okay to shoot a trout, but you just can't catch him with a hook, right?
You can shoot one, yeah. Good luck to it.
Yeah, yeah. Diane, I had to backtrack just a minute. We had a good day after the snow. We had a couple inches of soft snow, and it was great. Very silent going, and great tracking. And you know, I tracked one fairly large deer. It had a doe with it, and I tracked it for, oh, I don't know, a couple hours, and I just don't have the staying power I did when I was 35. You know, they take you through all kinds of hellish places. But anyway, it was fun.
Oh boy, I'll bet.
We enjoyed it. Yep.
Yeah.
Anything else?
You didn't get to them.
No. Didn't close the deal. No, sir.
No. Well, they'll take you for miles.
They will.
Buggers, I know.
They will.
I used to track them.
But that's why I call it hunting. Yeah, that's right.
That's exactly right. Yeah. That's right, you know.
Yeah.
I also was going to say, now, Grand Lake Stream, right now, today, or yesterday, or the day before, next day, you want to get down to Grand Lake Stream, and check the dam pool out. Now, there was eagles there. There'll be 10 or 12 eagles there, and I'm not kidding you.
No kidding.
And there'll be, if the water's low, real low, and it usually is this time of year because we haven't had a lot of rain anyway,
right,
the dam pool is going to be quite low, and there'll be thousands, and I'm telling you, thousands of salmon spawning there.
Right there in the dam
pool. It's really quite a sight to see.
Yeah. Hmm? And the eagles are trying to swoop down and take them, right?
You will see them do that.
Yeah.
And I've watched, and I think you saw a video I had one time there about Deagle picking up a salmon, taking it over on the island.
Yeah.
And he dropped it, get ready to eat, and a turkey vulture came down with his great long wings, come down and grabbed that salmon, started walking away with it, and the eagle came over to get the salmon, and out would come those great long wings, and the beagle would back off. Now, the eagle could have tore him to bits.
Oh, he could have, yeah.
With the claws and everything and the beak. But those big wings scared it back right off, you know.
Yeah.
But there's a lot that goes on down there in the lower pools, too, that they're spawning. So
that would be an exciting thing to watch, I would think, yeah.
It is. Put on your waders and get right out there, and you'll see. You don't have to go far. I mean, it's really quite a sight.
Yeah.
Don't take your camera with you, too.
There you go. That'd make a nice day trip.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just got word that turkey season closed yesterday.
Turkey season closed yesterday?
Yesterday was the last day.
No kidding.
Well,
I guess you better not shoot a turkey for Thanksgiving.
No, it might cost you a few dollars.
Yeah, all right.
Also, if you're roaming around out in the woods, too, you might be looking for you probably have seen a flower that's bloomed, and you know what that is? It's purple asters. Have you noticed that? They're a tough flower, but the bees are working them on these, you know, really nice days. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And quite late, but still, cranberries, if you know there's a cranberry bog, you can get yourself a fill your pockets, so take a bag with you and get some cranberries.
Oh yeah, Wiggy Robinson used to love to do that, and he'd made this great cranberry jam. It was great.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
Well, this time of year, you know, that's right now, the end of October and the 1st of November, they're usually loaded, these bogs of cranberries.
Yeah.
If you know where they are, somebody hasn't found them on you.
Yeah.
And also mushrooms right now. You know, they're wild herbs and plants. You know, there's all kinds of things to look for if you get tired of looking for deer.
You bet. All right. And I'm not tired yet, but I'm getting close. Nice to talk to you, Mr. Lehman, and give my regards to Alice and Precious, okay?
Yes, and I'll be on the air there next week, right?
You bet. You will be. You'll be hosting the show next week. No, it's the week after next. No, it's the 22nd. You'll be doing it the 22nd.
Oh, you've moved it up? Well, it was the
15th. Let me go back to my schedule. I'll let you know. Okay.
Okay. Let me know for sure.
All right.
I think Jim
Thorne is doing it next week, and I think I had you down for the 22nd. But I'll check it out and let you know. Okay.
Well, I got it in my calendar the 15th.
Yeah. All right. So let me know. I'll get it figured out. Okay, Bob.
Okay, Paul.
Thank you, sir.
Good night, guys.
Yeah. Good night.
Good night.
All right. That was the Fishing Report with Bob Lehman. And again, our guest tonight, if you joined us late, Rod Fraser, who's a ATV writer. for the Sporting Journal will be with us to talk about new snow sled technology. And then after the 7:30 break, we're going to connect with Hans Carlson from the Blue Hill Heritage Trust. Right now, though, we're ready for a trivia question. And speaking of trivia, Norm and I were talking before the show. It was sad to hear the passing of the Jeopardy host, Alex Trebek.
Is that it? I think it's Trebek.
Alex Trebek, who did the Jeopardy show for, I don't know, how many, 50 years?
Long time.
And he was a wonderful guy, did a great show, and he did pass, I think, today. Okay, the trivia question. This is good for a subscription to the Northwood Sporting Journal, I believe. This is the first of the month, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
I believe it is. Oh, last Sunday was the first, wasn't
it? That's right. We can't give one away. We can only give one away a month. I think we just gave one away, right?
That would have been last Sunday.
Okay, so we're going to, if you get the right answer, we're going to give you a free day of guiding by Norm Plord.
I'd wish him a lot of luck.
Okay. No, we'll give you a copy. This is the right time of year to do it. We'll give you a copy of my book, Maine Deer Hunter's Logbook. Now, I've got three books out, and this is by far the bestseller. Just keeps on ticking. It's like a Timex watch. Anyway, we'll make sure you get a copy of this book. It's worth about $18, and Diane pays the postage. So we'll make this book available to you if you know the answer to this difficult question. Now, this is not as easy as they normally are, so you got to put on your thinking cap. Here it is. Elk and deer meat are both good for you. They're high in protein, low in fat, calories, and cholesterol. But not counting moose and bear, what other main big game animal has equal nutritional value and, in fact, is higher in protein, lower in calories and fat than either venison or elk? Okay? We want you to name what main big game animal, and we're not talking about moose or bear, has equal nutritional value. In fact, it has the highest protein level of any game animal in the Maine woods. 1-800-966-1039 is the number. You ponder that, and we'll be right back. Okay, we have a couple of callers standing by. Let's see if they have an answer to our trivia question, which is good for a copy of my book, Maine Deer Hunter's Logbook. Let's take a call. Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors. Are you there, caller? Nobody there?
They're still on the line. I'm not sure why you're not hearing them.
Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors.
Hold on. Let me try that again. Go ahead.
Yes, I can hear you.
He's here now.
Okay. Go ahead. What's your first name?
Rock. It would be the Maine Wild Turkey.
All right. Congratulations. I thought that would be a toughie. How'd you know that?
I'm skinny.
Oh, you eat a lot of turkeys.
Yes.
Yeah. It's interesting. Good job, Rock. You've won a copy of my book. Interestingly enough, I was reading about this the other day in a magazine, but white-tailed deer are, as you know, low in protein. White-tailed deer is 22% protein, and a wild turkey is 25% protein. But this is interesting. White-tailed deer has 7% fat. A wild turkey has 1% fat.
Wow.
Correct.
So
yeah.
You probably couldn't survive on a wild turkey all winter because you probably wouldn't keep your furnace going, but it's awfully good if you're trying to lose weight.
Be a tasty winter.
Be a tasty winter, yeah.
Yeah,
that's correct.
You need fat.
You do need fat, yeah. Remember there was a story about that young trust fund kid up in Alaska trying to survive on rabbits?
Yeah.
And he perished because he couldn't keep him alive. Keep his furnace going.
I was aware of that story. No,
yeah.
People do need fat.
Oh, you bet. Yeah, you're right.
Maybe not McDonald's, but you do need fat.
Yeah. Well, there's nothing wrong with a quarter pounder once in a while.
No.
You know,
no,
ketchup only. Hold the cheese.
Yeah. I had a Five Guys burger the other day. That was really good.
Right. Anyway, Rock, where are you from?
Madamascona, Maine.
Oh, okay. Congratulations to you on getting the right answer to that question. It is a wild turkey. Right. And I made a mistake earlier in the program by saying that you could still hunt turkeys. The turkey season is over, just ended. And so don't go turkey hunting, Rock, okay?
No. I'm running my bird dogs. I've shot my buck, so I'm having a good fall.
Wow, you are in tall cotton, man. That is great. Yep. You got your buck already?
Yep.
Yeah, you're a lucky guy. I'm so jealous. Man, Anyway, good for you.
I've had a great year.
You certainly have. And you're working your bird dogs now?
Yeah. The only question I had was a lot of the guys that I train with, older guys, I'm 60, the guys I train with are 72, and they keep saying the flight birds haven't come down yet. I think they flew last week of September, first week of October. The woodcock season has been very slow this year.
Has it?
A lot of grouse. Usually I shoot 10 woodcock to one grouse.
Yeah, yeah.
And this year I probably shot 35 grouse, maybe 30 woodcock.
Yeah, well, you don't have anything to complain about. You're having a good season.
No.
Yeah.
I'm a happy guy.
Okay. Well, thank you, Rock. We appreciate you listening to the show. If you stay in the line, Norm will get your address, okay?
Okay, thank you.
And we'll make sure you get a book. Thank you, sir. Okay, I think we're ready to hook up with our first guest, Rod Fraser.
He's on there.
Hi, Rod.
Hi, how are you?
We're great. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing excellent.
Oh, great.
Unbelievable warm weather today, huh?
Oh, wasn't it beautiful? How warm was it in Massachusetts?
75.
Was it really? Incredible. Yeah, we had high 60s here in Ellsworth, Maine. It was just absolutely beautiful. Look, it's nice to have you on board, Rod. For the benefit of our listeners who may not know you, you write an ATV and snow sled column for the Northwoods Sporting Journal. I can't even remember what it's called. I should. I edit it every month. What's the name?
Trail Rider.
Trail Rider. There you go. Thank you, sir. Trail Rider. And you're writing a great column, and we appreciate what you do for the Sporting Journal and our readers. And I thought it might be just good to have you come on and talk a little bit about, I know snow sled technology has changed so much from the old days when I drove that little 12-horsepower Skidoo way back in the dark ages. What's on the front lines now for new snow sled technology? Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, so I think that one of the big things is probably increased comfort, right? So if you remember back in the day, I mean, when I was a kid, I started off on an old Skiroo. Remember those, the green snowmobiles?
Oh, yeah.
And then, yeah, then I had an old Bombardier Olympic, and then I had a Skidoo Elan after that. So I had, back then, that's single-cylinder, you know, sled engines back then.
Right.
Now they're got a lot more power and a lot more creature comforts and a lot more technology. You know, new snowmobiles today, you can get them with GPS built right into the dashboard.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah, you get digital gas level indicator, you know, all digital speedometer, odometer, triple odometers, mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff. Adjustable suspension, both on the skis and on the main part of the snowmobiles, so you can adjust your ride. There's just a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. Handle grips, heated. There's actual models that basically have a heated seat for creature comfort. So there's a lot more on the sleds today than we had years and years ago. Even that, not that long ago. I mean, the sled I have now is a 2012, and I'm looking at trading that in on a new sled. And the sled before that, I didn't have any of this stuff. I didn't have heated hand grips. I didn't have a heated thumb grip. I had mechanical reverse, whereas today all the sleds have electronic reverse. They have a lot more horsepower. The horsepower to weight ratio is much higher on the sleds today, so they can really, really take off.
Now, in the old days of trail riding, back when I used to do it, I don't now, but I recall that once in a while you get bogged down, you go off the trail or something, get bogged down. Usually a man and a half could get it out, but today you get one of those babies bogged down, it must be tough to get them back on course, right?
Yeah, it's if you get bogged down, it can be a chore to get you back. But usually when the group I ride in, I won't say everybody does, but within the group, I would say we have two or three tow ropes at any given time. I always carry a tow rope. And I would say over the last 10 years, I've had to pull someone out twice.
Yeah, so it doesn't happen that often.
No, if you stay on the trails, right, it's not going to happen. I get off the trails sometimes, get a little crazy, but most time I'm trail riding. I did a couple of times after a big snowstorm break trail on some of the smaller trails into a new location, but most of the time I just stay on the groomed trails.
Do these new high-powered sleds, do they so-called break trail as good as some of the lighter machines years ago?
Yeah, if you get to that type of a model, right, so there's a whole different type. You have your basic trail riding snowmobiles, and I wouldn't expect people to be out breaking trail on that.
Yeah.
But these sleds that are called mountain sleds, right, they're real long track, 144-inch track or longer. They'll tend to have a little bit bigger skis, and they really can break trail really well.
Yeah. Let me ask you this.
You see those in the advertisements, VP, you know?
Yeah.
Where they show the guys in the deep snow, cutting through the snow,
right.
Those long track sleds.
Yeah.
With the big paddles.
They
flow really well.
Does the snowmobile industry have, like in automobiles, they have the car of the year, the truck of the year. They have anything like that in the snowmobile manufacturing where a snow sled is picked by some organization as the top sled of the year? Does that happen at all?
Yeah, so the big snowmobile magazines, like American Snowmobiler and Snowgoer, for example, they'll do their sleds of the year, but they don't pick one overall sled. They'll pick a sled or a couple sleds from each category, right? So a trail sled, crossover, mountain sled, utility, and they'll pick one, you know, pick the best sleds from each category. But they tend to spread the wealth around, you know?
Well, how about, like,
you know, it's a very, go ahead.
In outboard motors, you know, there's some that get a reputation for being, you know, foolproof, bulletproof, like a Yamaha, for example. Everybody wants a Yamaha. Is it like that in the snow sled business? Are there some sleds that have a rep for being just the sled to get?
Well, I think it depends on who you talk to, right? I mean, if you talk to someone who's been riding Polaris for many, many years, they'll tell you Polaris. The Ski-Doo guys will tell you Ski-Doo. The Yamaha guys will tell you Yamaha. And the Arctic Cat guys will tell you Arctic Cat, probably.
So are you reluctant to pick one because of your...
No, I'm a Polaris. I ride Polaris. I've always had great luck with Polaris. I've been riding Polaris for years. But with the group I ride in, I would say half the people ride Polaris, the other half ride Ski-Doo, and I've never seen any sled problems with any of the different sleds of any of the people in my group.
Yeah.
So, and I do have a guy who I occasionally ride with, and him and his brother and the people in their group all ride Arctic Cats.
Okay.
I've never seen any of them have any problems.
Yeah, so they're all good. Yeah.
I would say, yeah, because you got four manufacturers now, you know, it's keen competition, and they're all trying to try to figure out a way to stay ahead of each other.
Yeah. Is the market for used snow sleds, has it spiked like used automobiles, used pickup trucks, and so forth? Are they hard to get because of the COVID close down?
No. The used snowmobiles are a buyer's market.
They are.
There's a lot of used snowmobiles.
Yeah.
In the ATV market, I think those who read the column know that this was a banner year for ATV sales. People not going anywhere on normal vacations, not going out to dinner, not doing things that they normally do because of COVID. A lot of people bought new ATVs. So it was a banner year, a very high sales year for ATVs.
Yeah.
I don't know yet if it's going to be that way for snowmobiles, but even still, I think if you go online and look for used snowmobiles, you better find what you're looking for.
Yeah. All right. Well, we appreciate you taking a few minutes to be with us tonight, and I knew that would be informational, and it's been great. And we appreciate you being a writer for the Journal. And good luck on the trails this winter. I guess we're praying for snow, although I'd like to see it hold off just a little longer.
Well, listen, my garden's all been harvested, right? So we can snow anytime now.
Okay. All right. Well, good for you. Have a safe time on the trails this winter, and we'll be talking to you again, Rod.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. That was Rod Fraser, who writes a column called The Trail Rider in the Northwood Sporting Journal, talking about new snow sleds for 2020-2021. Our other guest is Hans Carlson from the Blue Hill Heritage Trust, and Hans will be with us in a couple of minutes, but right now I think we're going to take a break, Norm. Well, I've just been in touch with my executive secretary, And we have a program clarification to make. Next week, Jim Thorne will be acting co-host, and his guest will be Judy Camuso, the commissioner of the Department of Fish and Wildlife. And then the following week, I'll be up in the Deer Woods. The following week, Bob Lehman, Mr. Trout himself, will be hosting the show, and I'm not sure who he'll have for a guest, but he always has a good one. So that's the those are the program notes, and we straightened that out, and thank you, Executive Secretary, for getting in touch and clearing that up. And we have our second guest standing by, I believe. Are you there, Hans?
I am, yes.
Good evening to you, sir.
How are you?
I'm doing great for an old duffer. How about yourself?
Well, about the same, yeah. I guess.
Well, it's what a lovely run of weather we've had, huh?
Oh my God!
Yeah.
I think I got sunburned yesterday. I was just kind of crazy for November.
Yeah, it certainly is. Yeah, I've been out in your one of your forests and having a good time. By the way.
Oh, where have you been?
I've been in the Surrey Forest
a
couple of times. Right. Yeah, beautiful day today. I was in there today, just beautiful. Hey, we've had you on a couple of times, but I know it's always good to remind people about the good work that you folks do. Before we talk about the trust itself, Hans, do you mind telling our listeners a little bit about you and your background? You're the executive director now of the trust, right?
I'm the executive director of Blue Hill Heritage Trust,
yep.
And my background, I actually have an academic background before I got into conservation work. I've done a lot of work up in northern Quebec with native people up there, in fact, I wrote a book called Home is the Hunter about their history and their culture.
All right. And maybe also tell us about how the Blue Hill Heritage Trust originated. Who started it? How did it get off the ground? And a little bit about its mission and some of the things you folks have been doing.
Yeah, it started back in 1985 in reaction to a condominium development in Blue Hill that a pretty broad spectrum of people in town were in favor of, and so we were started by a group of local folks and also folks from away too. It has always been sort of a broad spectrum organization and has grown over the last 35 years to the point where we have 12,000 acres under conservation and open to the public for a whole variety of reasons.
And what's it?
And our mission is basically to conserve land and to promote both healthy land and healthy communities by helping the two work together.
Yeah. And your income is derived from donations, but also you must have had some wealthy donors get this started way back, right? I'm guessing.
Well, it's interesting. We do rely on donors, and we have had wealthy donors. We also had a woman down in Sedgwick a couple of years ago who had donated maybe $100 a year for 20 years or so, and then she left us her entire estate, which turned out to be one of the biggest gifts that the organization had ever had from a woman of very modest means. We get our money from all sorts of good folks.
And the total acreage, again, you have, a lot of folks may not realize this, but your land holdings are divided up into various parcels, right?
Correct. And the biggest ones are Surrey Forest that you mentioned and Meadowbrook Forest, which are both over 2,000 acres, all the way down to, we have a few parcels that are only 10 or 15 acres.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what's the total acreage again?
About 12,000, just shy.
Yeah. And this land, this trust land, is open to all types of activities pretty much, right?
It is. Yeah, we have a whole suite of hiking trails. The land is open for hunting and fishing. Yeah, but basically, all recreational use. We also have a number of folks from, like, the University of Maine, particularly graduate students, who have done research projects, on our properties as well.
Yeah, there was also, I have some recollection that the idea for land trust has sort of grown in popularity. I was in an area hunting recently over in the Newburgh area and discovered, to my delight and surprise, a new trust over there that I'd never heard of before called the Northern Pawn Land Trust.
Oh.
Are you familiar with that?
I'm not. That's a new one on me, too.
Yeah, it's... It's. I don't think it's as big as your Surrey Forest, but it encompasses a pond over there. There's a canoe launch, and there's some really nice, they've cut some nice walking trails through there. And that was not there a few years ago when I was over there hunting, and so it was kind of a pleasure to find out that was there. Are these land trusts popping up in different places around the state?
They are, and there's a pretty wide network of land trusts across Maine. I think there are probably 80 or 90 land trusts now in the
are
state.
Are there? Wow.
And they range again from the very small to the very large. So there are some land trusts down in the Portland area that only have a few hundred acres, and then you've got something like Down East Lakes Land Trust, which has hundreds of thousands of acres under conservation. It's a pretty broad spectrum.
Yeah, are these when these land trusts are set up? Are they done on some type of a boilerplate contract? How does that work? Are they all different?
They're all the same in that they are charitable organizations, so they're nonprofits, and they all rely on charitable donations, you know, for their activities, and they hold land as nonprofits, and different land trusts do different things. We put all of our property into open space category and pay taxes on that. Some land trusts pay in lieu of taxes; they make a donation to towns.
Oh, so they're all different. So the Blue Hill Trust does pay a tax on its holdings.
We do. We take advantage of the tax laws that are available to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So anybody can put their land into open space and lower their tax rates, and that's what we do with ours.
Yeah. So you don't pay the same tax rate you would if it were just a private land holding, right?
What that means is that people can, you know, it's open to the public. It is open to hunting. That's part of those laws.
Mm-hmm. You wouldn't have any idea, you mentioned there are 80, 90 land trusts in the state, what their total acreage might amount to.
Oh, it's in the millions of acres.
Is it really?
I would guess, yeah. Yeah. If you there's something called the Maine Land Trust Network, and their website probably has that information on it.
So if somebody, let's say some older fellow is a farmer who owns, 1,000 acres or 500 acres, and doesn't want to see it developed into a housing area, but would like to see it, you know, protected in perpetuity, could an individual start his or her own land trust?
They could. It would be a lot of work for an individual to do that. It would probably be easier for an individual person rather than, because really when you create a nonprofit, you're creating a corporation,
right?
An incorporated structure, which means lawyers and all that sort of
thing.
Yeah. So if somebody's interested in conserving their land, it's actually better for them to work with whoever their local land trust is. Then they can donate property, but they can also just donate development rights, so that it remains their private property, but the land trust is responsible for making sure that it never gets developed.
I'm getting really complicated here, but I'm interested in this issue. If somebody wanted to, they had this acreage, and it was, you know, it wasn't fantastic, but it was nice, wild acreage, and they wanted to protect it in perpetuity without creating a land trust. Is there a mechanism for them to do that without involving, you know, a lot of attorneys and a lot of red tape?
Right. At the end of it, if you're going to put your land into conservation, you're better off having some attorneys involved, because it's a pretty complicated process.
It's complicated, right? Yeah.
But it's not complicated to the point where you can't figure it out either.
Okay.
And you know anybody's local land trust is always willing to just talk about what the possibilities are.
Yeah. Okay. Do you mind hanging on for a minute, Hans? We've got to take
a short.
Fine. Thank you, sir. Yep. I appreciate it. If you have a question for Hans Carlson, the number to call is 1-800-966-1039. And any question is, of course, permissible, and we appreciate your input. If you have a thought or a question for Hans, please don't hesitate to give us a call. Just want to remind you again that this program is sponsored in part every week by General Appliance in Brewer. They're the place to go if you're looking for gas ranges, gas refrigerators, gas freezers, or even Norm Plord's favorite top-of-the-line compost toilet.
Right, the wave, baby, as Jim would say.
You get paid extra for saying that.
Yes.
Yes, you do. Anyway, they're a family-owned business. Now, Al Elkin is the fellow that's the chief operator over there and owner. Al's been in the business many, many years. He's a top-notch guy. He knows his business, and he has a complete line of both new and used. And all the used appliances, of course, are all reconditioned and in great shape. I've purchased them from Al on a number of instances, and he's a great person to do business with. He stands behind all of his products. And you can reach him by phone, if you care to, at 989-3714. That's 989-3714. Or you can go and visit Al in person over there at General Appliance in Brewer. If you live in the Bangor area, you cross over the old Bangor-Brewer Bridge, and you take an immediate right and then an immediate left, and you'll be right there. He's right there in that whole little shopping area, General Appliance and Brewer. And again, they're great folks to do business with. We patronize them. We urge you to do so as well. They help make the show possible week after week after week, and have been. I almost think from the outset of the program, I'm not sure, but he's probably been with us on the show at least 20 years. And he enjoys having us mention him, and we know we bring him some business, and we appreciate you folks patronizing him. General Appliance in Brewer. Okay, our guest again, if you just joined us, is Hans Carlson. Hans is the executive director of the Blue Hill Heritage Trust. You still there, sir?
I am.
Okay, I want to ask you another question. In a land trust business that you have, I was just thinking about that. I'm wondering, what type of problems do you encounter? It's kind of an off the beat question, but what kind of problems would be problem solving that you have to do?
It's in some respects it's the same sorts of problems that anybody who owns land deals with. In terms of management and just the keeping up to date on what's going on your property, and of course, the bigger the property, the more work that is. I think we also have different groups of people who use our properties for different reasons,
right.
And sometimes they don't really understand their different perspectives, and so negotiating that is I wouldn't call that a problem, but it's just one of the realities.
Yeah, you might call it like a user conflicts, right?
Yeah, and particularly, actually, this is something that I wanted to say tonight. We have a lot of people, and we're down on the coast, of course. We have a lot of people this year who, because of coronavirus, are here at a time of year that they're not used to. And so we have a lot of people out in the woods who are not really tuned into hunting culture in Maine.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not really a problem, but it's something that's been on our mind, because also I feel as though we have more people who have asked to hunt on our property this year.
Mm-hmm.
I think people want to get some meat in the freezer for the wintertime.
Sure.
Yeah.
You're talking to one of them.
Yeah. Well, and if I can break free, I'll be one of them too.
There you go. Yeah. So I think you're putting it in a very nice way, very diplomatic way. But you're saying there are folks from away sometimes that don't understand the hunting culture. So they go for a walk with their dog or something, and they see somebody with blaze orange on, and it creates a problem.
They get confused, or they don't know that they're supposed to be wearing blaze orange, and they're just out there with their dog.
Yeah.
And not realizing that they're putting themselves at risk. And we do our best to let everybody know that everybody's out there on the land, but it's one of those things that worries me sometimes.
Yeah. You know, one day I was, I'll tell you a little story. I guess, do we have time, engineer, for a little story? I was down in, hunting down in a park down in near Rockland. Might have been Camden. Maybe it was Camden State Park. I don't know. Wherever I was, it was legal to hunt with a bow. And I had a bow, and I was dressed in camouflage, and I came out, was walking up the park road, and there was an elderly couple walking hand in hand, and it was a beautiful day, like it was in late September, it may have been, or early October. And I stopped to say hello to them, and I could tell the woman was visibly disturbed because here was this character with camo clothing and a bow, and I tried to be as nice to them and make them realize I was not an ogre or anything, and they said something about, what do you do? And I said, well, I mostly just sit in the tree all day and eat cookies. And they kind of laughed and walked away. But there are people who are taken aback by that. If they see somebody carrying a gun these days, I see it could create problems. Well, I appreciate you being candid about it. And so far, I've been using your force, and I've not had any problem with anybody, and I don't think they've had any problem with me.
No, and one of the things that, when you get permission to hunt on our property, you know, you get a signed permit that you can show to somebody that if they have a, some sort of issue with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm legit. I have my permit. I want you to know that. That's great. Well, it's a good thing you folks do. Now, if somebody wanted to donate to the cause, and it's a wonderful thing you do. I just love the area you live in, Dan. You're so lucky to live. I live near you, but I love that Surrey Blue Hill area.
Yeah.
It's such a lovely area. If somebody wants to donate to the trust, how would they do that?
So the best way is to, you can go on our website and you can sign up for our newsletter if you want to know what we're doing as an organization, and there's a donate page there as well. Or if you want to give the office a call, we were happy to give you more information.
Okay, what is your website?
It is www.bluehillheritagetrust.org.
And the phone number?
Yep. 374 5118.
5118. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's been great to have you with us, and we appreciate you taking the time to talk with us about the trust. And again, we commend you for the great work you folks do. It's sure great in with what you see, so much land being lost to development and everything. It's so great that there are folks like you that are protecting it for folks like me and others that like to be out there and enjoy it. And good for you, and great work, Hans.
Thank you. Well, and thank you for having me on. And, maybe we get to take a walk in the woods again someday.
I'd love to do that. All right. Have a good fall and take care, Hans. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, you too.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Thank you.
All right. That was Hans Carlson, Executive Director of the Blue Hill Heritage Trust. And they do some wonderful work in preserving land in perpetuity for those of us who like to get access. And, of course, with more and more posting today in the state of Maine, these organizations with the good work become even more important to us, I think. We're just about out of time, but I want to remind you again that co-host Jim Thorne will be the host next week, and his guest will be Fish and Wildlife Commissioner Judy Camuso. And I'll be up in the woods for a couple of weeks, and we'll see you all in 2 weeks right here on Maine Outdoors.